Zero Con Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Bro is on the way. I think maybe he did a little too much celebrating on his birthday yesterday, so he's going to be popping into the studio just a couple minutes late. But it's the perfect opportunity, guys, to discuss what we're going to do for him for his birthday tonight, because he's running from one building, the parking lot, to this building, so he is not able to hear us right now.
We're throwing a surprise party at his own house, right? Is that the plan?
Well, we were hoping to tap into his ample supply of liquor and wine. I mean, so how else would we do it?
Just about like 100 of our closest friends.
I know. I invited a couple people, too. I hope he
doesn't mind. I'm going to sleep in one of his bedrooms.
Oh, God. I'm going to take one of his Rolexes.
Well, he's just walking in. He's walking in. So,
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's so anyway, the weather's gorgeous.
Oh,
it's 81 today.
Fabulous.
So nice.
It's even cooler downtown.
Great seeing you.
Kevin, good seeing you.
Oh, good to see you, Ro.
Thank you. Kevin and I are just walking in. Do you realize that Kevin and I came from hundreds of miles away?
It felt like hundreds of
miles.
Golf
tournament.
It felt like
today.
I just came from Iowa.
Yeah,
that's how long it took.
We were raising money for the great Jared Payton and the Jared Payton Foundation today.
Awesome.
Along with Joe Donlan from WGN TV.
How nice! You were in a foursome with Dan Rohn.
And Dan Rohn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And can I just say
that he's an amazing golfer?
Yeah, he really is. He really is.
I've heard that about him.
But it was a pretty formidable foursome. I'll say that right there. But we couldn't finish it. We had to leave the course early to try to get back down here on time.
What? Because I thought you started like 8 o'clock this morning or something?
These tournaments always, there's kind of festivities and things move on and people talk and then there's this and that. So it kind of gets started a little bit later and the course was packed, you know?
John Vincent did a rendition of the Star Spangled Banner in which he held that third to final note.
He's still holding it
for 15 minutes.
Yikes.
And we're like, and you know, and listen, I want to be respectful. I don't want to cause any trouble here. I don't want to raise the president's ire. But I was doing that thing with my hand, like, you know, like move it along kind of thing. You know, we got to go. So
everyone played well in your foursome, or
it was fun. We had a great time, and a lot of money was raised for the Jared Payton Foundation.
Good,
so that's
I'm glad to hear
most important thing that was going on there. So if it took us a couple extra minutes, we kind of were banking on the White Sox game going a little longer than it went,
and it was fast.
It finished
classic
fast.
Getaway day.
Yeah,
that's the strike zone gets a little wider. People get a little more aggressive at the plate, start swinging at pitches. Got to get out of town.
Yep. Got a flight to catch. Right. And apparently the White Sox fly commercial now, so they didn't want to get out. Was that a problem? Like Minneapolis? Go, oh, we got a flight. We got to get to the airport.
TSA lines are awfully
long
on a Thursday.
Yeah, yeah. So we got to go.
Got to get all his bats and everything through TSA.
Oh, yeah.
It's
a whole thing. So
yeah. I'm looking at the picture here. You didn't do the short pants today, Ro, even though it's 80 degrees?
I did not. Well, I'm wearing an Aircast on my ankle. So I decided to go with the long.
It was Roe Strong today.
Yeah, it was Roe Strong. How about that?
It's like Tiger in the 2008 U.S. Open when he played on one leg.
Very similar.
Yeah. Exactly the same way. Anyway, we had a great time. And Jared, jpfoundation.org, I think is what it is, right?
It's Payton34.com is the Walter and Connie Payton Foundation. So all the info's on there.
Right.
JaredPayton.org as well.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
All right.
Nice boys' day right after your birthday.
Yeah, why, when we're out doing good, just because golf was involved, they make it seem, Kevin.
That's right.
Like it wasn't work,
like it
right?
wasn't, like we weren't sacrificing.
It was God's work out there.
You better just not have embarrassed us out there as a show.
No, I think Team WGN put a respectable performance together.
I'm saying the radio aspect. How'd you guys do?
I thought everybody contributed. Ro hit, I think, a 25-footer out there for birdie. That was nice. Dan Rohn mostly carried us.
Yeah, I would say that. But I'd say that's accurate. Someone had to guess how that went down. That's exactly how that went down. So we're here, and that's the important
thing.
We got everything done, and beautiful at Revel Feathers in Lamont, which I believe from downtown is a 3-hour flight. if I'm not
layover,
I think you
great job getting here, guys. I mean, such an act of self-sacrifice.
Yes, there we go.
Charitable giving.
What I'm
and
looking for. All right,
shine such a positive light on both of you for what you're doing to give
Thank
back.
You.
We really commend you.
Thank you. All right, now coming up in the program here. We have got Dr. Ben Bradley is going to be joining us. Paging Dr. Bradley. He'll be coming up in just a few minutes. Tell us what's coming up on the WGN TV news. like this, the president said that he doesn't really have to prepare for the North Korea summit.
I like to wing it.
Yeah, it was like, I don't really have to prepare. They were like, the president can't talk about Russia, can't do all these other things because he's preparing for the North Korea summit. And he said, no, I'm not. Basically, what he said he doesn't really need to do it. He knows they've been preparing for months. He knows what the issues are. Don't worry about it. We got it. This is really much more of like, you know, kind of a get to know you meeting.
He says it's about attitude. I don't think I have to prepare very much because it's more about attitude.
More about attitude.
The staff tells him to go to his office to study. They have to turn off the Wi-Fi.
Right.
Which, take away his phone.
They have to turn off the camera. Like, he uses Wi-Fi. They have to turn off his TV. Hold on, Gretchen's on. Wait, no, not Gretchen. I don't like her anymore.
I can't find the remote.
Martha's on.
Martha McCallum on Fox News.
Yeah. So that's
right. I bet he likes the Dana Perino.
I don't think he does.
No?
No, she's a Bush type.
Oh.
Yeah, no. No, he likes the Martha McCallum. He thinks he's slowly winning her over, I think is how he looks at that. I don't think she liked me in the beginning, but I think I'm starting to wear on her. I like it. She likes me. Rudy Giuliani, though, has made the most amount of wacky headlines, though, in the last 24 hours. So we'll talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, we've got to get to that. And then Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, made an announcement in advance of the North Korean summit.
I'm leaving.
This better go well.
This was great. I really enjoyed my 4 weeks of being Secretary of State, but I've got to go. He's not. He's not leaving.
He said, okay. President Trump will not stand for a bad deal. You can be sure of that.
All right. I sort of believe that's true. I don't know what I believe anymore, actually, but I believe that the president would be willing to walk away if he thought he was going to be embarrassed. But if he thought he could get away with a bad deal, I think he'd do that, too. But I don't know I think he knows he would have. If it's a deal that looks exactly like if they use the exact template of the Iranian deal, and then they just hand it to him. Look, we found one of these in the closet. Try this on for size. Little Rocket Man. Did you like that? So we'll see what happens there. It's going to be fun. All right. Yeah. So Ben Bradley's going to be here. Tom Skilling, get you ready for your weekend. Yes, Thursday already. The weekend is just upon us. He'll be here at 3:40. Top 5 you won't believe. Richard Roper will be reviewing Ocean's 8.
Is this the female cast?
The female cast of the Ocean's movies, yes.
I like all the Ocean's movies.
Yep.
And this one looks pretty good.
Yep.
So. Cast looks amazing.
Yep. So we have that. And also, we sat down earlier with Dan Abrams. He's got a new book about Lincoln's last trial, and he'll also tell us what he thinks about what's happening in the world as well. So that is coming your way today on The Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis. But first, Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour? It's a Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Mm-hmm. Is Ben Bradley out there playing golf for the Jarrett Payton Foundation golf tournament today?
But I just was briefed on Rose Wardrobe by Joe Donlin.
Oh, mm-hmm. What did he think of it?
I am told that Ro looked like he could have been on the tour. He was that nattily dressed.
How amazing is that?
It was the pants.
Yeah, this is wearing long pants, that's all. And the only reason I was wearing long pants is because I had an air cast on, and I didn't want nobody to see it.
You're killing the whole mojo here. Yeah, I mean.
Actually, he thought I was wearing pants. My legs are so hairy, it appears. And it's funny because my hair down there is navy blue. It's very weird. I don't know. I guess years of wearing jeans, I'm not sure.
I just briefly saw Joe and he told me he golfed with you guys today, but just based on how impressed he was with your turnout, I would have assumed you were in knickers or something like that.
Yeah, no.
You think something fancy, like, you know, those plaid and funky shorts that the golfers wear.
Right, yeah. Like the late, great Payne Stewart. No, I was just wearing long pants. You know, I showed up there, I acted like I knew what I was doing. And listen, it's for Jarrett Payton. Jarrett Payton is, and he worked here at WGN Radio before he went over to work at Channel 9 and CLTV. Mm-hmm. And he is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful guy. And he comes from this most amazingly philanthropic mm-hmm. family. There, you cannot help but have just, you know, they're like Chicago's family, the Paytons.
Yes.
Right? You know, that's they just are the, you know, they've been so great to the city and given generations of football fans and then families in need and all these other things that they've done. They've given hope to so many people. It's just great. Right.
And it's great to see how Jarrett gosh, almost every day finds some way to celebrate his dad's legacy or see bits of his dad and his own kids, and you know, just it is incredible.
I did try to sign his son to a contract out there. Was that inappropriate?
As an agent, I think he's
six.
Yeah.
I think he's six, yeah. and I was like, hey, listen, I've got some paperwork. Bubby, darling, sweetheart, yeah. Listen, I've got some paperwork here for you. Don't tell Daddy we're doing this, but sign this right here.
Right. We know you'll have some options later on, and we just want to limit them right now.
Yeah. I believe soccer is his sport.
Actually. Fine. It could be big someday in the future. I've got him to a multi-sport deal.
Why are we doing
deal.
A Donald Trump voice?
It's That's not, it's, the Bubby agent.
It's actually my agent who sounds just like Donald Trump.
And they all kind of do sound like that.
Every guy from New York sounds like that.
Bubby,
darling, sweetheart, listen, this is great.
It's been a wonderful opportunity.
I love what you are doing on WNG Radio in Chicago. Where are you again?
In Des Moines, where are
you? You sound like an agent I used to have.
Yeah, I know. There are times I'm like, I'm right here. I'm standing right here.
Sorry, I got Rush Limbaugh on line two. Bye-bye, Bubby. And that's how it goes. We all know that. But I'm looking at, you know, the Jarrett Payton Foundation, and it's amazing because of the work he's doing on behalf of children and looking at bullying and trying to, you know, I'm sure they talked about that out there today as you were raising money for this foundation to try to help kids at those moments in their lives when they do need a little boost.
Yeah, Kev, that's what we're doing, right? We're talking about this stuff out there. Yeah,
God's work out there.
Saving lives.
That's what we were doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's incredible to see what Jarrett's done and how he has continued to honor his dad's legacy. And then you go in and you realize he's not only working his full-time job here at GN, but then he's doing all this anti-bullying work, and he's everywhere.
Yeah, he is everywhere. And his sister, Brittany, is awesome.
I mean,
she is. Just a great family. And, you know, their mom has been
amazing.
Just, you know, so spectacularly amazing and strong. This whole family has been strong in this, you know, especially when the city mourned Walter. I think as much as we've ever mourned any public figure in this area.
Probably true.
So it's true. All right. What's coming up on the WGN-TV news at 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10 with my golf partner and my buddy Joe Donlin?
Yeah. Thanks for the invite, by the way.
Yeah, right. You're welcome.
You have to work.
Yeah.
We are.
Joe told me that you had to work for him, so that's in case he couldn't make it back.
Yeah, yeah. We are following the breaking news involving an ATF agent who's been shot in Gary, Indiana. Apparently, they were involved in some sort of controlled drug buy as a narcotics investigation. That agent apparently shot in the chest. Mm. Our Gaynor Hall is there. We're also talking a little bit about Greg Zanis. He is the guy from Aurora who makes crosses.
Oh, wow.
And distributes them. It started as a local thing here in Chicago.
Throughout the United States, right?
Yeah. I mean, after the Las Vegas shooting, he loaded up his truck with crosses for all of those victims. Did the same for Parkland.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a display going up in Grant Park. Our Mike Lowe has got that story.
Huh. How about that?
And Dana Rebick reporting on a hero Chicago cop who saved the life of a child.
Oh.
Nice.
We're also talking President Trump.
Yeah, what did he do?
Well, you know, I was reading the New York Times, and I just want to read you a couple of quotes as he prepares to head to Canada to meet with the G7 leaders. And I would remind you, these are our allies.
Yes.
Here are quotes from representatives of those various countries referring to President Trump's decision to impose tariffs. Patently absurd. That's the British Trade Minister.
Mm-hmm.
Illegal, that's what the Canadian Prime Minister called it.
Right.
Insulting and totally unacceptable is also what he called it.
Uh-huh.
So there's some speculation. I think the Times headline was Trump heads to Canada after alienating most U.S. allies.
Right. Well, all of them. I mean, they have all said something, except today, one of the allies is going to be the G7. Shinzo Abe, the Prime Minister of Japan, was incredibly solicitous, I think is the word I would use, toward the president. We'll have a little bit of that later on in the program. He was there, and they were talking about North Korea and what they want out of North Korea. You know, there's a woman that was kidnapped as a little girl 51 years ago from a little fishing village that overlooks the Sea of Japan. And a number of people were kidnapped and taken to North Korea over the years, and they want that woman back. Even though she would now be in her mid to late 50s, they want her back. Her parents are still alive. and they, you know, they would like to see her one more time. And and the question was raised at the press conference today with Shinzo Abe and Donald Trump. Are hostages going to be a priority here, Japanese hostages? And then they were like, we'll look at it. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, whether that's part of a deal here. The White House is really trying to pour cold water on any notion that there's going to be a deal struck here next week.
Well, the White House is doing that, trying to throw water on it. And they're saying they describe it as a meet and greet. But then President Trump, you know, every chance he gets, no, more than a photo op,
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, Ben, I don't know if you've noticed this. The president does have a tendency to... it tends to, you know, like to say a lot of things, and some things work out, some things don't. He likes to throw a lot of stuff up there and out there. That's just part of doing business, I think, isn't it?
We did have this clarity today from the Secretary of State. Mike Pompeo was asked about Rudy Giuliani and some comments. Rudy apparently not just chiming in on the Robert Mueller investigation, but also on North Korean affairs.
Oh, right. Oh, yes.
And Stormy. And so you have the Secretary of State at the White House podium saying, no, Rudy Giuliani does not speak for our administration.
There you go. Because Rudy Giuliani said that he had Kim Jong-un crawling on his knees for this meeting. And the...
Right, on his hands and knees.
On his hands and knees.
Begging for the meeting.
Do you tell a dictator, you know, a dictator blows up his uncle with an anti-aircraft gun? Isn't that... I mean, the guy's already got a bit of an ego. And he's got a little bit of a complex, too. Because he is a little rocket man. So you got to, and do you want to do that? What's wrong with Rudy? And then Rudy's out there talking about porn stars and they have no dignity and how wonderful Donald Trump's wives are. All three of the wives are great. They're great, wonderful women. I'm sure
he's got a couple of exes himself.
Plus he had time to dance in Israel.
Right. Yeah. He's got a couple. I mean, listen.
He's got three himself.
I'm sure that Marla. And that Ivana are sitting around going, oh, yeah, these great men. Don't worry about it. And I think Melania is also saying the same thing, too. Like, I don't know. I don't know how this goes. It's funny that 66% of Donald Trump's wives have accents. Don't you think it's kind of an interesting thing?
66%. Interesting. There are three.
Interesting thing. All right. Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it. Yes. So we'll see you tonight at 4 o'clock on WGN-TV News.
I shall look forward to it.
See our good friend Ben Bradley. Sorry you couldn't make it out there today for the Jared Payne thing.
But say hi to his new friend, Joe Donlan.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. My new best friend.
Known you for 18 years. Never invited me to golf with you, bro.
Joe's his friend now.
Yeah.
I had no idea you golfed, Ben. I had no idea.
You never asked.
Maybe if you took time to learn about the real me, bro. Don't just pump me for news information. I'm a human being here. I have thoughts and I have feelings.
Oh, my God.
I agree with
that. Are we married? Are we married?
That Roy, he's a very good guy.
Yeah, 100% of my ex-wives
speak English
fluently.
I can confirm First that language. Having met several of them.
Yes, 100% of them.
How come I get to hang out with your ex-wives and Joe gets to golf with you? That's what I want to know.
All right, we've got now Judy Pilak has got the WGN News. Judy, get me out of this.
Gladly. An autopsy has determined that a man fatally shot on Chicago's South Side by police was shot in the back. Police say officers watching the area via a surveillance camera spotted 24-year-old Maurice Granton taking part in an apparent drug transaction. They say he appeared to be armed. When they approached him, he ran away, and the officers say when they told him to stop, he produced a gun. After the officer shot him, police say they recovered a gun near where he was shot. They say there is evidence that gun was fired at the scene. A 44-year-old Chicago woman charged in a fatal Rogers Park fire this week that left another woman dead. 51-year-old Maria Silva of a jump from the fourth floor of the burning building in the 1700 block of West Toohey. Margaret Reed charged with her murder. Three female Democratic state representatives calling for an independent investigation of House Speaker Mike Madigan's office. Today's announcement coming a day after an employee accused Madigan's chief of staff of making lewd comments and mishandling complaints of sexual harassment. Tim Mapes resigned, making him the second top Democratic leader forced out in less than a week. And President Trump met with Japan's prime minister today at the White House, where they discussed the president's summit with North Korea's Kim Jong-un. During a joint news conference, the president said he could invite Kim to the U.S. if the summit goes well. Let's get an update now on WGN Sports. Here he is, Kevin Powell.
Thank you, Judy. Jose Berríos tossed a complete game. James Shields surrendered three homers. And the White Sox fell to the Twins 7-2 in the series finale in the Twin Cities. The Twinkies jumped on Shields early, scoring three over the first two innings. They added four more in the fourth. Shields takes his seventh loss of the season. Sox offense couldn't get much going against Berríos. He pitched a six-hitter for his second complete game of the season. Sox road trip moves on to Boston tomorrow night. We'll have the call at 6:10 here on WGN from Fenway. At Wrigley, Cubs and Phillies meeting in the rubber match. That game is tied right now. Alex Ovechkin is just one win away from winning his first Stanley Cup. He and the Capitals lead the expansion Golden Knights 3-1. Game 5 tonight in Vegas. Bears chairman George McCaskey met with the media at Halas Hall today. He says he does think players should stand during the anthem, though he says there was a false perception that players who performed on-field protest were unpatriotic. McCaskey says that is and never was the case. Bears wrapped up minicamp today. And in tennis, Rafael Nadal has reached a record 11th French Open semifinal as he closes in on his 11th championship at Roland Garros. On the home of the Blackhawks, Northwestern Wildcats, and White Sox baseball, Kevin Powell, WGN Sports.
Your money, traffic, and weather next on WGN.
Patriotsoftware.com, accounting and payroll, keep your time and money.
Mike Cappell here, serial entrepreneur. We entrepreneurs innovate, create jobs, and put employees on our payroll. Then we pay payroll taxes, which allows the government to function. Without entrepreneurs, we'd all be in a soup line somewhere. Speaking of innovation, Patriot Software is disrupting the archaic billion-dollar payroll industry for 1 to 100 employees. Our customers usually rate us 5 out of 5 stars. We're scaling quickly and inviting accredited investors to buy stock in Patriot Software under Reg D, Rule 506C. Need a new payroll provider? Or want to own stock in the rising star of the payroll industry? Visit PatriotSoftware.com. That's PatriotSoftware.com.
Keep your time and money.
Message and data rates may apply.
Hi, I'm Frank Thomas, the Big Hurt. After I left baseball, I just couldn't stay in shape like I used to. Turns out, once you hit 40, your body has less free testosterone, and that can make it harder to get into shape. So I got back into the game with Nugenix. I'm feeling stronger with a lot more energy and drive. You want to get back into shape? Get Nugenix.
All you have to do is send one simple text.
Frank's right. Just text BODY to 321321 to get a complimentary bottle of award-winning Nugenix, the number one selling free testosterone booster at GNC. Its unique man-boosting formula is powered by Testofen, a patented key ingredient clinically researched to help a man feel stronger, leaner, more energetic, and more passionate.
And guys, she'll like the difference too.
Nugenix samples are not available in stores. To get your complimentary bottle, text BODY to 321321. That's BODY to 321321.
Your money on WGN. The Dow up 95 points today at 25,241. NASDAQ was down 54 at 76.35. And the S&P 500 down 2 points at 27.70. The VIX at the CBOE up about a half point at 12.13. Crude oil today settling at 65. Corn and soybeans both settling down. Wheat was up. Let's get a check now on WGN traffic. Here's Violetta Podramatic.
Thanks, Judy. Traffic is sponsored by Walgreens. Inbound Eden's 35 minutes, Lake Hook Road to the junction. Still no delays outbound. Over on the Kennedy, it's a different story. Inbound side's an hour, 15 minutes O'Hare to downtown. About an hour on the reverse trip. The Eisenhower's heavy either way at an hour, 5 minutes between 390 and the old post office. Same thing on the Stevenson. It's an hour between 355 and Lakeshore Drive. And if you're headed in on the Dan Ryan, it's about 35 minutes from the Circle to 95th. 24 minutes on the reverse trip. It's officially summertime. That means time to go to Walgreens for trusted summer essentials that you need at a great value. And get ready for summer care no matter where. Walgreens, trusted since 1901. For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app. Approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. I'm Violetta Podrumetic in WGN Traffic Central.
And now Tom Skilling's forecast tonight, becoming partly cloudy, warm. A shower or thunderstorm is possible pre-dawn, below 63. And then tomorrow, mostly cloudy, warm, a spell of showers or thunderstorms in the morning. A better chance with more numerous showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon and evening. The high 80, but lower 70s lakeshore. Friday night, heavier storms may produce downpours. The low 64, and the rain continues on Saturday. Several showers and thunderstorms possible, especially in the morning. The high 79 degrees. It is 81 degrees. Right now at O'Hare, Midway 79, Mount Prospect 79. It's 67 degrees along Chicago's lakefront. I'm Judy Pilak in the WGN Radio Newsroom. This is the stuff that matters on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Tom Skilling is being brought to us by Permaseal Basement System.
Yes, I am. How are you guys doing?
Thank you.
Good,
we're well, Tom. Thank you for being here. I want to say that we're playing a little Prince here. Prince would have been, how old do you think Prince would have been today?
Let me guess, 52?
57.
57.
No, I'm guessing. I don't know.
60.
Oh, all right.
How about that?
Wow.
60.
He looked 60, 6-0.
Very young for his age.
He did.
Yeah.
He did.
What a loss.
Yeah.
How did your golf... So your golf game was spectacular, huh?
It was... Well, we had a lot of fun. I don't know how spectacular. We had to leave the course early because it was going so slowly that we... Actually, there was one moment where Joe Donlan said to me, I don't think I'm going to make the 9 o'clock tonight. So...
And he's in pretty good shape, so he must have really worked him out or
he's
something.
He's quite an athlete, actually. I know he played college hockey, but he is... And he's got that hockey... Hockey players tend to be very good golfers, got that hockey swing.
And he's quite a break dancer. He did it for the morning show around here.
You heard about that.
That's enough. I mean, my heart stops just watching that, not even participating. By the way, Julie Unruh and I were, we volunteered to caddy for you guys.
Oh, that was sweet.
And also do some divot replacement and all this kind of stuff.
That would have been nice of you to handle that for us. I tended not to. Actually, it was really nice because Dan Rowan was always replacing the divots. Yeah, so that was good.
Other people's divots, probably.
Little dirt on Dan, no pun intended.
Right.
That's good.
That Kevin, I just walked away from all the damage we were causing. Dan's like, are you ever going to replace a divot?
Yeah, that course will never be the same as what you're saying.
Pretty much. I think not. It's so beautiful out there. Ruffle Feathers is gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Do you golf, Tom? Are you a big...
You know what? I used to caddy when I was in high school, and they would give us a caddy's day. And I took some lessons, and these guys would just look at me and say, in so many words, you're a lost cause. So I never... and it's funny because in the DNA, my dad was quite a golfer. He loved golf and was very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But... somehow didn't come through the gene pool. I don't know. So, I just look at my weather maps and try and forecast the weather.
Went back to his room and looked at his weather maps. Sort of
dejected. That's okay, I got other stuff going on.
Don't worry, one day I'm going to be really good at this, and now I'm going to get even with everybody.
Yeah. My idea of a drive is getting in the car and coming to work.
There you go. I like that.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Were you an Evan Scholar? Did you go through that program as a caddy?
No, it was out in Aurora, and Aurora Country Club out there would invite us, and we loved it because you could get hamburgers as a caddy. But they barbecued them out there, and they were only 25 cents each.
Wow.
So we thought that was great.
Is this in 1934, Tom? What are you doing this?
No.
You're not that old, are you?
No, I'm not.
That would have been trouble for me. Yeah. Four hamburgers at a time.
And it's interesting because one of the members one year bought a house that had been closed up since World War II on the Fox River in Yorkville. So he came down the caddy line one day at about, we all gathered at 4:30 in the morning to be available. And he said, hey, do any of you guys want to paint? And a bunch of us raised our hands, and so we went out there. And I'll tell you, there were more interesting bugs in that place that had collected since World War II.
Yeah.
I had things with 18 legs on them crawling across the floor. It was kind of creepy.
Oh.
In the caddy shack there?
It was a home that had been closed up right on the river. It was quite... I remember one day...
You know what? This is like a movie Richard's going to be reviewing later on.
Yeah, I know. You could do a movie out of this, but it was fun. So my you know, my catting led to that, to painting, and I was as bad at that as I was playing golf. All so,
right. Well, the catty thing, you know, there's Evan Scholars here, the Western Golf Association,
yes.
does this scholarship program for kids who caddy in the throughout the Chicagoland area.
Yeah,
and it's an amazing program. Amazing, yeah. And the Western Open every year is the people who come out and caddy in the Pro-Am are all alumni of that. So you can have like 60-year-old guys coming out and caddying for the pros, right?
Man.
Just to be a part of the. It's a really cool thing. They put so many kids through college that otherwise may not have had a shot at.
That is amazing.
It's a really cool thing.
Yeah, it's very. I've heard about that since I was young, and but I didn't participate in it. Hats off to those who do, and to the program itself.
Yeah. All right. So I've had a bunch of requests already today.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you're out there, everyone wants to talk about skilling, no matter what it is.
They do. It's so true.
Oh gosh.
They're like,
probably cursing me under their breath.
Well, there's a couple of people.
But today
that go,
was gorgeous.
Yes, it was gorgeous. But then, you know, there's always people out there. I could do that too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
When I gave that talk down at the IBA the other day, I said, you know, if we had a dime in our profession for every time we said, boy. Oh, I wish I had a job like yours and I could be wrong every day of the year.
Oh, gosh.
And Harry Volkman and I used to, Harry would come up to you and say, I wish I had a job like yours where I could be wrong. And I only could think, every time I hear that, folks think it's the first time you've ever heard it. And I think, come on, I wish I had a job like that, too.
I wish I had an attitude like yours where I could just walk up to anybody and say anything. Jagweed.
But Tom would never say that. See,
that's what he's thinking in his head, though.
I know. You know, on my last day, I'll have things to say, you know, and just got it. No, I won't.
Gosh, I wish I could have a job like yours where you just come up and say anything to anybody, you jagweed.
You know, we're going to introduce a new, it'll be hate weather that night. You know, now I'll bet you people
want to.
I hope all of your basements flood.
Yeah.
If they do, call Permaseal.
Sure, that's right. We've got the right sponsor. These folks are ready to go. Yeah,
exactly.
Our Permaseal friends.
So I've had a bunch of requests, though, today about what the weekend's going to look like here, because it does feel like summer has got to have kicked in some level of permanence now.
Well, you know what? You got to get past mid-June and even some years late June because for the lake to have warmed to the point, it's not a serious problem. But we're getting into that territory now where these east winds aren't, you know, the cooling affairs they used to be. But I'll tell you, Sunday's going to have a pretty good east wind, and that'll be pretty cool right along the shoreline. It's interesting today. They've been up in the low 90s out by Marseilles, so the heat is close. And it's masked here in the city by this wind off the lake. The weekend's going to be a touch-and-go thing. There'll be some clusters of showers and storms, but this by no means, even though you'll see rain in the forecast each day, this is not going to be a total washout this weekend. There'll be many hours where it's not raining. And it'll be fairly warm. Saturday, the wind will pick up off the lake in the afternoon. That'll start cooling shoreline areas. And then everybody here in the immediate metro area will feel much cooler Sunday, but only for a day. The warm air will begin to wash back in again. Next week, it looks like a warmer week next week overall than what we've had recently. So that's good.
So those windows when it's not raining, are they the right windows when people can get out and do things?
Yeah,
it's not late, late at night.
Oh, I think so. You know, it looks like some pretty concentrated clusters of storms, and some of them could have some pretty good downpours tomorrow night. But and then they'll thin out Saturday, and once the northeast winds develop, that has a stabilizing effect. It'll shove the stuff downstate. So, folks, now, and actually, that's an area that could use the rain. Problem is, in warm season rains, you get dumped on in one location, and somebody else, gets nothing down the street.
Mm-hmm.
It's not this good general stuff that recharges soil moisture and all. It's pretty dry downstate. But we'll at least have some chance of rain this weekend. But for us, those windows should be okay, I think, Anna. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Plan right. accordingly, Ro.
I don't know.
I was in Lake Michigan last weekend, and it was we were on the Wave Runners, and we kind of got in a little bit.
You did
what?
I know. It wasn't bad.
So you were in the water?
We were in the water.
No, Wave Runners, are those the things you stand on?
Sit on.
Sit on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Those are fun.
the things you stand on, I see people with those with the
jet
paddles.
Jet skis? Are they those?
Oh, paddle boards?
Paddle boards.
Oh, the paddle board.
Yeah,
that's
a very different item.
You're going to fall right off that.
Yeah.
I know.
I fall right off that.
Me too.
I lie down on the thing.
Down,
yeah. I lie down on it, and I just hold on
doggy
to it
paddle.
With my hands and my feet.
You and me both.
Like a marsupial.
People do yoga on board those. I mean, they take amazing core strength to do those.
Isn't it the truth? The coordination to stand up. I watched that and marvel. I don't think I've ever seen anybody fall on those things.
Do you think if you just sit on it, the waves will bring you in at some point?
Well, that's a thought. Do you know that some people were wind sailing up on Kathy Osterman Beach the other day? Somebody sent me some pictures. Now, there's a sport that takes some talent. You know, you put those big parasail type things up.
Yeah, that does take some, and that takes talent and insanity this time of year to be doing that.
I know.
So when you got did you go on the other side of the lake to do this?
We were in the New Buffalo, Michigan area.
Oh, okay.
And we just went, just kind of went not very far out. And we all kind of got in at one point. And I was thinking of our prior conversation about how cold the lake was.
Yes.
And it was cold, sure. But,
But
isn't it warmer over on that? I've always been told, like when I was a kid, my dad would always want to go to the beach over there.
Yeah.
Because it's warmer over there.
There's some truth to that. When the irony is east winds bring us the cool temperatures, but also the warmest water. And on that side of the lake, the prevailing winds in summer are southwest most of the time. And so that pushes the warm surface water over to that shoreline more often than not. So your dad was right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought it was because the nuclear plant over there is what I thought.
A little bit of a warming glow that comes from that area.
Hey, Ro, the day that that's what's going on, forget it. We don't have to worry about drinking water anymore.
Well, I got to tell you, I always had this. I had the same experience almost every. We would go there every couple of weeks when I was a kid. Like, we wanted to go to the beach. You always wanted to go that side. So we'd, drive over. We'd either go to the Indiana Dunes State Park or up to the Warren Dunes.
Sure.
And and I'd get a mouthful of water, like, in the water. Like, and this would happen like between 3 and 4 o'clock in the afternoon, a mouthful of water. Mm-hmm. And then we'd go have like a dinner over there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the E. coli would kick in right on the sky, right on the skyway.
Lovely.
On the skyway, right at the McDonald's. And I'd be like, Dad, can we pull over at the McDonald's?
How nice.
Yeah.
What a wonderful memory to
every
have.
Every childhood memory. It once kicked in at US 30 Dirty Drag, too. That's not a club. That was an actual drag strip here in the Chicago area.
Yes. Well, how interesting to hear that you were a veritable Petri dish.
I always had kind of a rough constitution when it came to the whole GI tract.
Well, it hasn't done you any harm. Look,
emotionally, it has.
By all accounts, you were something that ought to be on the cover of GQ magazine today with your golf outfit.
Yes.
What is going on there?
Well, you stood out, Ro. You stood out. I mean, you look at the pictures, and everyone's sort of casually dressed in their khaki shorts and their golf shirt, and then you've got this like, it looks like very well planned out outfit that just looks very what you're doing.
We have a source of, I have a source of intelligence now, and two sources here that can report to me on what Mr. Khan looked like today,
That's very interesting.
And Mr. Rohn and Mr. Donlan.
Dan Rohn looks like he belongs on the PGA Tour. He just looks like a golfer.
He does.
He looks like a guy who was a professional golfer who now is standing in the middle of a fairway with a headset with an antenna on the top of it. Like the reporters are there.
Saying.
And they're always like, yes, he's got about 150
yards
to go.
He's got about 150 yards.
He's pulled out a pitching wedge. and you're like,
Did you see that shot that Tiger made the other night? We ran a clip on that. It was like, one of these amazing shots where he's hit the green and the ball rolls right in, which those shots always amaze me. They aren't planned, are they? I mean, that's got to be.
You know, the funny thing about that is for us, they're not planned.
Right.
We look at the green or we look at the, if you're like 100 yards out, you look at it and you go, all right. I'm just going to try to. I think the green's kind of going that way. I'm going to try to put the ball there. Maybe it'll suck down toward the hole. I don't know what it is. But those guys, they know, and they have little charts with them that show them all the undulation, and they can drop it into like the size of a hat on the green. And they know what kind of spin they want on it.
I know.
There's like real planning with those guys.
You know how you see on those sci-fi movies when they're landing a spacecraft on a foreign planet and, you know, you get this topographic display on the screen
yeah,
and all,
right.
The grid thing. I always figure when they get down and they're surveying the green that there's some image like that in their heads that the
yeah,
rest of us don't
for sure.
have.
And they know how things are going to break. They yeah. are able to like when we were playing golf today, the four of us are looking at each other go, which way you think the ball's going
right.
to go?
And two of us go, I think left. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think a ball to the right maybe.
I don't know.
Just pounding at the hole, man. Good luck.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way it was. Yeah. Yeah, and it was like, and then it would be like, at the end, we'd go, no, it's definitely going right to left. And then when it go left to right, he goes, I told you it's going to go left to right.
And Joe's a lefty, so it threw off everything. You know, it's all mixed up.
Yeah. But seriously, right? Ro, I get the idea. I have the impression you're a pretty good golfer, so I think you're one of those people who can do that. Am I wrong? Or
can do what?
I mean, can look at that and see where your ball is going to go when you're
putting. We all have a gun. Listen, I mean, that's just an absolutely true thing. We can sit there mm-hmm. and look at it, and 50% of the people in the room say, "Yeah, no, it's going to go left to right. It's going to go right to left." I mean, some things you can see, obviously.
Sure,
right? And it's, sure, you can definitely see. But there are some decisions, and then you miss the hill before the hole.
Right.
It's like this little mound, and it was like, we literally stopped on a hole, and we had like a 10-minute conversation between the four of us
yeah.
about how why did it go to the right before it went to the left? It was I don't know, but and then there were people in back of us. There was yelling and screaming. There was crying. Gnashing of teeth.
You know, the thing that took the Joanna was trying to figure out how to get out of the sand traps that I always would wind up in. And, you know.
So frustrating.
It was. It really was. And then these people would, you know, bounce
that's
the ball out.
It's a simple thing to do. And, you know,
No, it is.
It's a simple trick. And once you learn the trick, you'll never forget. It's like riding a bike.
Mm-hmm. But you're already sort of beating yourself up because you're there. So you're in the wrong mood to begin with
that's
when
it.
You start swinging. You just want to bat it out of there.
Yep.
Some people aim for the trap so that they can loft the ball onto the green.
Seriously?
Yes. Oh, a lot, especially the pros who can do it in their sleep. They'll hit it in the bunker purposely.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, between the sand traps and the lakes, you know, I just...
Yeah, that's a separate issue. The water's a separate issue.
That's true.
I think they've got a shark out on Ruffled Feathers because there were balls that I thought were like, you know, or an alligator or something because they were like, I thought they were still there next to the water and they were gone when I got there. So I don't know what's going on. All right. Tom, we will see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow,
thank
guys.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Good to talk to you.
Thank
Bye,
you.
Guys.
Just off the set of Top Gun 2. Congressman Adam Kinzinger is joining us right now.
Boom! I got a cameo as Goose.
I gotta say, I was up very early this morning,
mm-hmm.
which is not a normal occurrence for me. I'm an afternoon into the evening into the late night kind of a guy, and I turn on the TV, and there is a scruffy one eye open. Adam Kinzinger doing an interview on cable news.
Man, you were up early.
What time was that?
Well, I could tell you were up early because he was like, let me tell you something. Allison Cameron, let me tell you something. God, I am so hungover.
You know, part of the problem, though, is somebody like next to me is also doing an interview,
right.
And you're like, you don't want to yell over each other because if I get loud, they get loud, and then it turns into a stupid thing. So,
is that what's happening?
Crazy.
All the people were lined up with the TV cameras at the time.
It's a marble hall we're in right now, and so they put you right next to them. And somebody's like, rah, rah, rah. You're like, oh man, and not you know.
It is amazing how
in one ear.
How close everybody is on the White House lawn or there at the Capitol, and you literally could just reach out and touch the person next to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're arm length away from people, and those microphones are supposed to be very tight in terms of how they pick up the sound, but sometimes they're not. But anyway,
so it sounded like it was the Golf Channel. Was he kind of whispering like he was?
That's right. Yeah.
With Adam's case, it sounded to me like he had morning voice. Like you know, like when someone calls you first thing in the morning, you try to act like you weren't.
I'm totally awake. Totally awake.
Right. Yeah. I'm totally right.
Oh, I've been up forever.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like when they call you at noon.
Yeah. Exactly. When you call me at two. I'm in, and I'm like. But he's all dressed up and everything, so he'd gotten there, but it was just, you know, he was morning voicing it. All right, listen, you had a lot of important things to say through your morning voice, so let's talk about those. All right, let's talk about North Korea first, because we're going to talk to Mickey Bergman, who was one of the chief negotiator to get Otto Warmbier back from North Korea, coming up next hour. So there is, you know, there are a lot of people here. There are a lot of chefs in the kitchen who are telling people, like the president and some of the negotiating team that is currently working, about how they should approach the North Koreans. I just want to ask you, as a congressman, what do you think Congress is going to be looking for here from the president?
Well, you know, I think expectations have been kind of tamped down on the first meeting, which is fine, and because this will be a process. We're going to be looking for, you know, the part of the risk I think the president and his team run is we don't want a deal that looks like the Iran deal. As I've said, you know, I want to see a deal that's going to lead to a denuclearized North Korea basically for infinity. There will be some give to North Korea. I mean, they're not going to do this for nothing. There'll be some economic benefits, probably some security guarantees from China, sort of like what Cuba had from Russia. Mm-hmm. And those are fine gives because we don't seek to invade North Korea. So ultimately, you know, as this process goes, there's going to be ups and downs, hopefully more ups. And then when we come up with a deal, I think the president indicated today, or the administration indicated today, that they want this to actually go through the Senate as a treaty, which would be actually quite a big deal. And, you know, as you know, had the Iran deal gone through as a treaty, it wouldn't have been able to be withdrawn from like this.
That's right. Because it takes like, what, 67 senators or something in order to approve something like that, which is an unbelievably high bar. You would think.
Yeah, absolutely.
He'd have to.
But there's still things that unite us here. And I think if they come up with something that says, hey, look, we don't have to go to war in North Korea. North Korea's not going to have nuclear weapons and X, Y, Z. I think this is something that, you know, whether you're Elizabeth Warren or Ted Cruz or Rand Paul, you'd probably support if it turns out to be pretty good.
Okay, so here comes the devil in said detail.
Yeah.
Is do they still get to keep a nuclear program for energy? Because that was Iran's deal.
That's the question. And I don't know the answer to that. Probably not, because, I mean, frankly, they're not going to. The only reason they would have a nuclear program is to ultimately have a breakout capacity to nuclear weapons. I'm sure that will be Kim Jong-un's kind of opening thing. We want this for energy, et cetera, et cetera. And that'll probably lead to some kind of a guarantee from China, South Korea, us, you know, to make sure they have energy. But, I mean, if you look at it from Kim Jong-un's perspective, the difference that he has versus like Iran, he really doesn't meddle too much, with the exception of sharing technology, which is a concern, outside of North Korea, though. He's really focused internally. Iran takes the benefits of the Iran deal and destabilizes the Middle East. So it's a little bit of an apple and orange scenario, but I think ultimately probably the negotiations are going to sound a lot like they did under the prior
administration. I mean, they have been a little expeditionary, though. I mean, I know that you have access to things, and you know, as a congressman, in the committees that you are on, you get to see things that we don't get to see.
Aliens, all that.
Yeah, right, I know that. But you did, and I completely agree with you about Iran. I mean, they've been meddling in a lot of things, and they are a strategic enemy, really, of our two allies there. And the funny thing is that our two allies hate each other there. Saudi and Israel don't really like each other. But the one thing they agree on is Iran. And that was the interesting piece in this moment of pulling out of the Iranian nuclear deal, is that you got consensus from both the Iranians, or from the Saudis and from the Israelis, that was going to be a good thing. And because they have been meddling in everywhere. But, you know, now what you have seen, though, is that Iran is basically taking over Iraq, right? I mean,
totally.
Yeah, I mean, and you're an Iraq War veteran. I mean, you see this. You see that Iran is expeditionary in a way that, and we're not talking about that, and the president is not talking about that, but they basically have just won a gigantic political victory in a legitimate election in Iraq, and they will be, you know, Iraq will be a satellite state of Iran before too long. Now, you don't want that in, but here's the question, and we'll get to, I mean, that's for another day, but on the Korean Peninsula, there's some interesting politics going on the Korean Peninsula, where the South Koreans, there's South Koreans that want unification with North Korea because they like the way North Korea does business in terms of, you know, their crazy, you know, communist and totalitarian kind of government. How do we keep that from happening?
Yeah, I mean, you mean in terms of just like the South Koreans meddling or trying to unify under that?
Well, I think, yes. I guess what I'm concerned about here is that we give too much power to Kim Jong-un to be more of an influence in South Korean politics. Talk about your meddling. And South Korea has one of the largest economies in the world, right? I think seventh or eighth largest economy in the world. So, you know, what do you do?
Yeah, I do think it's a concern. I think, you know, it's a tough one because, again, you know, the part of getting a peaceful deal done without resorting to war includes, you know, having to give something to the other side. And that would be some kind of an economic benefit more than likely and a security guarantee. And so you could see, you know, Kim Jong-un meddle in South Korea. The difference, though, is while they're culturally the same, obviously, they, I think, you know, when it comes to sociology, it's very different. I mean, the North Korean people basically think that this guy is you know, Jesus incarnate. He's a god. His grandfather was, you know, ascended from the Mount of Happiness and unicorns and olives. But I think when you're in South Korea, which I've been to, and you see just the amazing economic story that South Korea is, I don't worry too much about a North Korea meddling situation. But what I do worry about is in this process giving China basically undue influence in the region. They're obviously right there. If they play a big role in this deal, you know, China's going to come out of this strong. And I think in the long term, China is going to be our biggest competitor for sure.
The president today was saying that he could walk away from this if it doesn't look like it's worth sitting down, and that we're nowhere near what we need to be in order to have a discussion. And then at one point he even said, you'll know this went badly if you start hearing me say maximum pressure. We don't talk about maximum pressure right now because it's very friendly, but if you hear me say that later, then you'll know it went badly. But I guess the real question is, do you feel any sense of optimism that's real and tangible at this point that even opening these discussions, that there looks like there may be an opening meeting, and that from there, who knows what's going to happen? Do you feel there is some sort of a good faith conversation that will begin here?
Yeah, I do. And I think it was very telling, and it was kind of amazing when I saw some of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle when President Trump called off the meeting. They you know, excoriated him. And I go, don't tweet, because those tweets aren't going to age very well, because 24 hours later, Kim Jong-un is coming back basically asking to redo the summit, to put the summit back on. So I think the president, in a very minor way, you know, at that point, showed that he's willing to walk away. I think he is willing to walk away. I've met with the president on the North Korean issue, and to alleviate a lot of people's concerns, I'll tell you, this guy is very smart on this issue. He knew, I think, you know, I put myself in pretty much an expert in foreign policy. I don't say that braggingly, but he knew some things about Asia that I didn't even know. And so, you know, this idea that he's disconnected, not paying attention, just kind of shooting from the hip, it may seem like that. And, you know, there may be some of that, but I actually think the president knows and has a goal that he wants to achieve. And then you put on top of that, I know, you know, Mike Pompeo very well, and he's one of the smartest guys I've ever met on these issues. So I think he's got a good team around.
Do you feel good about this?
I do. I mean, I don't want to celebrate yet, because this can go anywhere. And, you know, we've done this before and it's led to bad things. But I do feel confident that, you know, we will be willing to walk away from a bad deal. And I think that's the mistake the Obama administration made, is they never telegraphed that. And at the end of the day, the Iranians were really able to take advantage of them in things like ballistic missile development.
All right. Well, I have to leave it at that. I wanted to ask you about the G7, too, but that's not the airplane, the actual summit.
All right.
It could go either way, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Stand up straight in the G7. That's a nice thing. The new one coming out. All right.
So get in that movie, Top Gun 2, Congressman.
Oh, he's already in it.
I'll be Goose. I'll die early.
Val Kilmer's already signed
Spoiler.
Up.
Spoiler.
Exactly. No, I see you as the guy that actually saves the day. You're the one who shoots down the aliens. Isn't that what happened?
Yeah. I'll be the one in the locker room in my whitey tighties mourning the loss of my friend to sad music.
Right. They're always taking a shower. You know, you've been in the United States Air Force. I know it's different than the Navy, but the Air Force for, you know, 2 decades. Do you ever, in the locker room, like take a shower and, you know, like whip each other with towels like they did in the homoerotic scenes in Top Gun?
Yeah,
I feel like these are personal questions.
Is if, Yeah, our favorite thing is if you have a bad flight, we snap our teeth at the other guy and call him dangerous. Dangerous.
Gosh, I don't want to hear that.
I don't know if the Navy was... I think there's a lot of guys who are naval aviators who look at that movie and go, oh, please. You know, I like to fly in...
It was the best recruiting tool for aviation, though, ever.
Yeah. And
really?
Also,
yeah,
it was. And also, yeah. I think for, you know, for Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military. All right, thank you. Appreciate it.
You bet, guys. See ya.
Bye. Oh, God.
All right, I'm going to take that as he hung up on me because he didn't like the answer, and that's the way that... I want the record to reflect that he didn't agree with that, and he hung up on me.
Okay. I'd like the record to reflect.
It'd be good for his career.
There are things in my mind I can't unsee right now.
All right. Prime athlete that I am, I just hit myself in the head with my headphones.
How'd you...
I think I just knocked myself out.
Straight down the fairway.
Exactly.
You survived golf today without any injuries.
Yeah, we did. I did not have it. I had an unspeakable injury on Tuesday playing golf, but I did not today. So now I'm okay. Right? Did I? I don't recall, actually, of getting to that point.
I was very impressed, especially when you immediately pointed out your brace on your ankle as I walked up to you in the lot. I expected more struggles and grimaces from you, but no, you battled through. It was really
strong. I did. You know, once you get in the game, man, you can't. Right. You don't give up.
Yeah.
Once you're dialed in, once you're in the zone, man.
You know, when Joe Donlin and a Dan Rowan and a Kevin Powell and a Rokan, you know, go out there to try to win something big, like we tried to win something big today.
Yeah.
You know, we don't give up. We don't, you know, we're a team.
Yeah. And then we found out you could buy mulligans, and I pulled a Violetta, took the credit card out of Rose's wallet, and I'm like, we'll have all the mulligans, please. Bought ourselves a victory.
They got to put that card back just in time for your outing.
Yeah. All right, we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Right now, it is 5 o'clock, and... Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Richard Roper stepped into the studio with us. Richard Roper is going to be reviewing, coming up in the 6 o'clock hour, Ocean's 8, Hotel Artemis, Hereditary, which some people are saying... is one of the scariest movies of the decade.
Ooh.
Is Richard Roper saying that?
I don't think he's going to tell us yet.
You people! Nicolas Cage also has a movie out this hour, and we'll talk to him about that as well.
How many movies does he do a year, would you suppose?
I was looking at it, Anna, the other day, and it's like, every time I'm due for a haircut, there's a new Nicolas Cage movie.
And some are direct to the video now.
Yeah,
right?
He's got six, the IMDb, which keeps really good track of most roles, says, I think, 15 movies in 2017 or 2018 for Nicolas Cage.
More than I thought.
So really, almost...
He's like
really
an old school guy, like Mickey Rooney would do that in a year. Like
the guy that would walk off the sound stage at Warner Brothers, take off the cowboy outfit, put on the cop outfit, and who am I playing now?
I love Nicolas Cage.
See, I'm not a fan.
I know we've had this conversation here, but I'm a Nicolas Cage guy. Some people are not a Nicolas Cage guy. I'm a Nicolas Cage guy. All right. I want to also coming up this hour, on a serious note, Mickey Bergman is going to join us. Mickey Bergman was the chief negotiator in the Otto Warmbier Exchange with North Korea. Okay. He'll talk about what it's like to negotiate with the North Koreans and what we can expect coming up next week out of Singapore.
Fascinating.
Really fascinating interview coming up. And Dan Abrams, we sat down with him earlier in the week, and we'll play some of that for you in the 6 o'clock hour. He's got a new book out about Lincoln, but which is fascinating too. But also... Mm-hmm. We talked to him about what's happening right here in the world.
Get some A-list journalists, historians, etc.
Yeah, it's a big shoe right here that we have to fill. Hmm. All right, so what shall we do now?
Because you know what time it is, right? Well, if you look at the clock, and
if it's 5 o'clock,
it's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five,
let's go.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right. Checking in at
number 5.
While discussing his upcoming meeting with Kim Jong-un in Singapore, the president argued that he actually doesn't need to prepare very much for the summit because he's really focused on attitude, not detail.
I think I'm very well prepared. I don't think I have to prepare very much. It's about attitude. It's about willingness to get things done. But I think I've been preparing for the summit for a long time. as has the other side. I think they've been preparing for a long time also. So this isn't a question of preparation. It's a question of whether or not people want it to happen. And we'll know that very quickly.
It's like him telling his dad why he didn't study for the test. Is basically what that's like. Now, we did just talk to Congressman Kinzinger, mm-hmm. who I trust his mm-hmm. his words.
Sure.
Because, and he said that he's one of the foremost experts on North Korea in the United States House of Representatives. And he said he has met with Donald Trump, and Donald Trump seems incredibly well prepared and aware of the circumstances over there.
Right. And prepared to walk away if it doesn't seem like the meeting is worth it. But certainly.
I don't think he's going to walk away if he's there already. I've already come to Singapore. I'm not leaving.
He likes quick visits to overseas, though. He likes to get back.
He likes to get back.
Now, Melania is not going to this. No. Right? She's not going to the G7 or this.
Don't think so, no.
Right. And she did come out yesterday, right? Did we see her?
Yes.
I didn't see pictures.
She looked like Melania.
Okay.
Yeah, we saw her.
And I don't like the fact that people are saying she had some work done at Walter Reed, not known for its cosmetic surgery.
That wouldn't be
wrong
the,
place.
Yeah.
Well, at least for elective cosmetic surgery. Let's put it that way. They're actually very well known for burn.
Absolutely.
Stuff like
but
that.
Not you know somebody yeah. saying I just want to lose a couple inches off the hips.
Right. Or could you fix this thing under my eye? I'd like that to be better. All right. Now he told reporters that he's prepared to walk away. If no agreement for denuclearization specifically is reached.
So I am totally prepared to walk. It could happen. Maybe it won't be necessary. I hope it won't be necessary to walk because I really believe that Kim Jong-un wants to do something that is going to be great for his people and also great for his family and great for himself. Okay?
That left me a little cold. This whole idea family. That Kim Jong, and that's why I get it that he's got to suck up to Kim Jong because Kim Jong Un, you know, literally kills and incarcerates and puts in work death camps thousands upon thousands of his own people just to help himself and his family, right? To secure them politically, to intimidate the opposition, and in some cases to punish his enemies, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a reality. So when he talks about his family like that, like he's going to help his family, I didn't like the fact that Trump seemed very comfortable with the notion of sometimes you got to be a leader to help your family.
I don't remember anybody ever saying, like, you know, when they're negotiating with Stalin, worried about the extended cousins of Joseph or Olaf and Igor, the Hussein brothers, whatever their name is, Udaf and Igor.
Or Boris. Stalin.
But you got to think, I mean, look, if he's telegraphing that he won't, that there's a possibility he won't even show up for it. You got to think in order for Kim Jong-un to think that he can show up, he has to be meeting them somewhere on this denuclearization issue, right? You don't show up to this and not have that peace.
That is exactly the question that we will ask.
Yeah, I think
this North Korean negotiator coming up at 5:40 because that's you've hit on it. That's the billion-dollar question. All right, now one more thing from the number four. Mike Pompeo has had to respond to what Rudy Giuliani was saying. Rudy Giuliani, while in Israel, he thinks no one else can hear him when he's over there. He does not realize that he's being recorded and there's an internet and people can hear. He said that Donald Trump got Kim Jong-un to crawl on his hands and knees to meet with Donald Trump. Probably not the kind of thing that you want to have this very insecure North Korean nuclearized potentate dictator here. So Mike Pompeo was asked to respond to what Rudy Giuliani said.
I took him as being in a small room and not being serious about the comments. I think it was a bit in jest. We're moving forward. We're focused on the important things. I know Rudy. Rudy doesn't speak for the administration when it comes to this negotiation and this set of issues.
Ooh, take that, Rudy.
I need to get T-shirts printed for the White House. Shut the F up, Rudy.
Wow.
Because he's not helping.
No, he's not helping.
Not helping. I mean, whatever the Stormy Daniels stuff or lawsuits, things like that, or even the Russia investigation, wants to push people off or intimidate them. But when it comes to this very delicate negotiation with North Korea, stay in your lane.
I think that's true.
Checking in at
number four.
Here he is himself, Rudy Giuliani. This is where it gets really interesting. Okay. Again, swerving around between these lanes, he slammed the credibility and character of Stormy Daniels because she is an adult film actress.
Stormy, the porn star. You know, every porn person can't be a star. I never heard of her before. Now, I don't really look at porn. Please get that down. I don't look at porn. But I would say that that's about the same credibility as her lawyer, who basically got thrown out of the case. I don't believe Stormy Daniels.
You know, we can listen.
I don't believe it. I don't know. Sue me, Stormy. I don't believe it.
Anybody who says they don't watch porn, watch porn.
Well, he started going. He was one heartbeat away from saying, "Look, she's no Jenna Jameson or a, you know,
a classic, real classic
in her prime."
The good old days when Jenna Jameson was running the porn industry.
Why are we even debating this, whether or not she's a star or not?
But seriously, who's better?
I always thought of Stormy as more of a character actress than a lead, but she has, you know, carried quite a film over the years. Sometimes she's the only woman in the whole cast. You know, you got to give her credit for that.
Very
what
busy.
About that, Rudy?
Very busy. You know, talk about getting your porny or whatever the Emmy, what is the, or the Oscar?
The
AVN Award for getting the AVN.
Remember when she was in 9.5 Men? That was a great
break. Oh, my God.
All right, wait, there's more.
The money was repaid by the president, so it was...
You settle cases to protect people's reputation, whether it's true or not. Because if she said it, as she has, people will believe it, whether it's true or not. I respect all human beings. I even have to respect, you know, criminals. But I'm sorry, I don't respect a porn star the way I respect a career woman or a woman of substance or a woman who has great respect for herself as a woman as a person and isn't going to sell her body for sexual exploitation. So, Stormy, you want to bring a case? Let me cross-examine you.
Oh, gosh. What bravado.
Sounds like the start of a porn movie.
He's just in that such a giant glass house that Rudy lives in when he starts throwing the stuff out there.
Oh, Mr. Giuliani, this is my first audition for a deposition. What do I do?
Can you tell her how does she feel these days with all these Stormy Daniels affairs going on in the background and she's not
I can't speak for Melania.
But you're a personal friend.
I am. And she believes in her husband. She knows it's untrue. I don't even think there's a slight suspicion that it's true when you look at Stormy Daniels. I know Donald Trump and look at his three wives, right? Beautiful women, classy women, women of great substance. Stormy Daniels.
Yeah, but you don't watch porn for substance.
But he never.
I don't think that's the point.
I don't think what he was saying.
But that's not.
Even Melania.
You could have something of substance at home and still want Stormy Daniels another time.
Excellent point. But I think
Melania Trump's spokeswoman pushed back on Giuliani to say, "Shut up!" Essentially, you don't speak for her. She's never discussed this with you. Stop telling people what she believes because you don't know it. That says something,
right?
Stop talking.
Yeah, I don't think anybody doesn't believe. I mean, come on, Rudy. Who's Rudy? To whom is Rudy zooming? What is he? We get this. Of course, Donald Trump. She's got every detail. What about the other one? That what's the one? Karen McDougal.
Mm-hmm, she said
no one's denying that.
Oh, that she said that was like an 8 or 9 month affair, and nobody
right.
You know, refuted that.
I mean, all of a sudden, Rudy of all people. Yeah. Is going to just sit there and tell us, oh, no, the president's completely fidelitous to his wife.
Right. He respects women so well.
I'm about family. I married my second cousin.
I was dating the second woman when I was married to the first. And I
told the second I was leaving her for the third in a press conference.
And then the third left. Then the third left is now leaving him now.
Oh,
geez. Right?
That's a shame.
I didn't know that.
But the second one wouldn't leave Gracie Mansion in New York.
They had that standoff.
Right. And that's a public house. Like the mayor lives in like the White House there. It's owned by the city of New York. It's their house that the mayor lives in. And his ex-wife wouldn't leave.
Yeah. It was the War of the Roses. And if you got to go back, if you want some good cheese fun, because you know who played Rudy Giuliani in the TV movie? James Woods.
Oh, God, it is. It's true. That's so totally true. All right, we'll get to your 3, your 2, and your 1. But first, top 5 at 5 continues right here. Up to
number 3.
This is very interesting. The Bears today and George McCaskey, their chairman, say that the team supports the NFL's new national anthem policy, but they acknowledge that the issues behind the protests and they applaud players' social activism. So they're kind of, you know, everybody's
kind
trying
to have
it,
line there.
Yeah, trying to have it a little bit of both ways. Mm-hmm. Just a little touch of this and a little touch of that.
Everyone's right.
Mm-hmm.
You're both right.
Right. Can we move on and have a football season now? Would it kill you? How's Rokon doing?
Roquan.
Yeah, whatever. All right, now, here's what McCaskey told reporters, that the first players who took a knee did it for a purpose.
First players to take a knee during the national anthem did so to bring attention to two issues, police misconduct and social inequality. These are legitimate issues that deserve discussion and action. As a country, we can do better. It's part of the Founding Fathers' charge to us to form a more perfect union. Commissioner Goodell said it very well, and it bears repeating. It was unfortunate that on-field protests created a false perception among many that thousands of NFL players were unpatriotic. This is not and was never the case.
It wasn't a false perception of many. It was an enforced perception of one.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
It was the Commander-in-Chief of the United States saying that the Commander-in-Chief of the United States military, I should say, it's not the Commander-in-Chief of me. No one's the boss of me, man.
You're not the boss of me.
But you had the Commander-in-Chief of the military, the President of the United States, saying that's what that was. That this was a direct insult to the troops themselves, and continuing to make that point over and over and over and over again, mm-hmm. and sometimes rather aggressively. And so that's mm-hmm. where the misperception was. But it does seem to me that it is possible,
mm-hmm.
I would even say likely, that the president was doing that because it was a political wedge issue that he was winning. And he did
Absolutely.
Win.
Absolutely. He knew what he was doing. When he talked about, let's get some of those SOBs and fire them and tell them all that stuff. Yeah. He knew, yeah.
You just wonder what's going to happen to any players that defy this policy.
Some teams said they'll cover fines, things like that. McCaskey was asked about that today. He says they still haven't decided on what they'll do for individual team enforcement or anything like that.
Got it.
You know, NFL has a lot of fish to fry here. They got a lot of problems, and they got to fix them, and they've got to get around them. And I think that this is one that they're just deciding is one too many for them, because they've got the concussion issue, and they've got attendance and television issues that they have to address. They may have too many teams in the league at the moment, and that is its own problem. So they've got scheduling issues and talent issues and all the rest. So I think they would like to put this to bed if they can.
Well, 95% of the players weren't kneeling most of the time last year anyway. They were never
looking.
None
of the Eagles were.
Yeah. I mean, it was never a huge issue with most of the players.
And none of the Bears either, if I recall that correctly. Did we ever see that here? I
don't remember seeing
that. No, they always locked arms. That was their sign.
Which
is great.
I mean, let's not even get started. Yeah. You know what? Don't get me started. Checking in at
number 2.
Last night, Samantha Bee apologized for her use of the C word. Now you're thinking, why did it take so long? It's because that's how they produce those shows. You know, 5 days. You know, they do like 3 days at a time, and then they produce. And so this is the first opportunity that they've had in production to be able to do it. At least that's what they're saying.
This time, I used it as an insult. I crossed the line, I regret it, and I do apologize for that. The problem is that many women have heard that word at the worst moments of their lives. A lot of them don't want that word reclaimed. They want it gone. And I don't blame them. I don't want to inflict more pain on them. I want this show to be challenging, and I want it to be honest, but I never intended it to hurt anyone except Ted Cruz.
Kind of made it funny there, but apparently Variety's got a story out today that advertisers are not jumping in even after the apology. So she, it may have a bit of a chilling effect.
This was, you know, of the mistakes that have been made, there's so many of them. I can't even begin to count them on both sides of this. But this is one of the dumbest because it took so many people to make this mistake go through.
Yes. Exactly. You're
I mean, this was a pre-recorded show, scripted. This was an intentional moment. I mean, this was so freaking stupid. Although now Roseanne has tripled down. She went, she reposted the joke as she sees it. The slur of Valerie Jarrett.
That's great.
She's doubling down.
Yeah.
So, so much for calmer heads prevailing here. All right, and finally, this is for our own, the great Brian Altimer, the sonic genius of this show.
Number one.
Prince fans are getting a birthday present because today would be the 60th birthday for Prince Rogers Nelson. How about that? They are releasing, there's an announcement today that a new album of material is going to be released called Piano and a Microphone. Will be released on September 21st. It's a 9-track, 35-minute album featuring previously unreleased material with Prince at his piano at home.
Oh, wow.
Recorded in 83, the track list includes early versions of Purple Rain, 17 Days, and a cover of Joni Mitchell's A Case of You.
Wow. Cool.
How about that?
Yeah.
I'd like to hear that.
Also, his take on the 19th century spiritual, Mary, Don't You Weep.
Oh, man.
Which Spike Lee is using in his forthcoming film, Black Klansman.
Mary, don't you weep.
Gives you chills, doesn't it?
It does. Wow.
Prince, that is a that will be highly anticipated, the release of that. All right. We've got to move on here. Coming up in just a few minutes, stay tuned for this. Mickey Bergman is going to join us. He is the chief negotiator with North Korea over the release of Otto Warmbier. He'll tell us what to expect from North Korea next week in Singapore with the president. Stay close.
The top five at five.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. It's an honor to have Mickey Bergman with us, who is a negotiator who works for Bill Richardson's company, who's a former governor of New Mexico and a figure in American politics for the last couple of decades. And Mickey worked along with Governor Richardson and the release of Otto Warmbier from North Korea and has extensive experience in negotiating with North Korea. And Mickey, let's just start with this. The president today was talking about the negotiations. He said he wasn't really preparing for it. I don't know that we believe that. I think he may be kind of trolling the media a little bit with that. But obviously there's teams of people who are going to be taking part in these negotiations, not just the president. But he did say it's more about attitude than anything else. When you heard that, what did you take from that?
Well, thank you for having me. I think it's important that those two statements from the president, one part, I don't need to prepare so much for this summit, and number two, it's all about attitude, are kind of reflective of what President Trump typically does or say. He will be prepared. There will be people who prepare him. His staff, I should say that. His staff and his team will be prepared. Secretary Pompeo will be prepared. What I can absolutely assure you is that the North Koreans will be prepared. I can assure you that they've made a psychological profile of President Trump. They're prepared on all levels, on substance and on psychologically confronting or dealing with a President Trump.
May I ask you this, though, Mickey?
Yeah.
Do you get the sense that Kim Jong-un, in a lot of ways, is a similar character to Donald Trump? Do you think he's a more of a hands-off official that delegates these kind of, his dirty work to the people below him, and that, or the details, I should say, to the people below him. And then it will be just sort of a get to know you and these two guys sizing each other up as opposed to getting into the details?
So I think there are elements in their personality that are pretty similar, and then elements of it that are very different. They both, they're both all about the personal relations. They both believe in their ability to charm their opponents. So from that perspective, that's why I think Trump thinks it's all about the attitude. But there's a big difference between them. Kim Jong-un, despite what we like to say about him because we don't understand him, that he's irrational and crazy, Kim Jong-un is extremely rational, and he's following the same methodology that the North Koreans have followed for years. To us, it feels like it's breaking news. It feels like a roller coaster. But the North Korean proposal that is on the table currently is not much different than what it has been for years, except that no American president before Donald Trump accepted it because it leaves North Korea nuclear. Now, President Trump has his expectations of his ability potentially to overturn that proposal. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, American presidents before did not go for it. This president, at least initially, is saying yes. Hell, let's go meet.
That's the point: is that they weren't going. That president said that they had to take that off the table for the American president to meet. And Donald Trump is rolling the dice here that he doesn't have to take that off the table. And before the meeting, he'll try to get it taken off the table during the meeting, which is an interesting new tack on this, because they are nuclear now. Well, I mean, we got to do something, right?
Oh, well, there are between 40 and 60 nuclear warheads that they have. Now, the chances of them disarming all of them is, in my opinion, zero. Because if you are Kim Jong-un, if you try to think in his perspective, that's a death sentence for him. So he's not going to do that. However, the president can do, and I think that's what this summit is going to look like, if it's successful. It's going to have three parts. It's going to be a joint statement, the two leaders, a lofty statement about denuclearization of the peninsula, denuclearization of the world, whatever it is, but it won't have many legs. That's the first one. It will be feel good. It might get us a Nobel Prize. However, the second part is the most important part. It will be a framed negotiation, and they will say 2-3 years, and Pompeo will lead this. And the president, President Trump, will call it, this is the denuclearization negotiation. But in fact, it will not be about disarming. It will be about giving up their future nuclear program. So further development, further testing, further proliferation, but he will not disarm. That's the second part. And the third part, it will be tangible humanitarian things, unification of families, and what I hope will be the return of remains of U.S. military servicemen who have died in the Korean War. There's 5,300 Americans, POWs, MIAs, still there that their families need them back for burial.
Speaking of, how long were you involved in the negotiations to bring Otto Warmbier back home?
So the president has been approached by the family within 2 weeks of Otto's arrest, and since then we've been involved in this until his eventual release. Even though the release took place by the State Department, we have negotiated for a year and a half with the North Koreans trying to figure out what are the parameters and conditions for his release.
And who were you dealing with? Are you able to say? I mean, how high up were the people who were in contact with you?
Oh, we're doing it through the foreign ministry of North Korea. When I was in Pyongyang a year and a half ago, negotiating those terms, it was with the Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs, mm-hmm. And that was because it was me, and that was also because it was me and not the governor. If the governor was with me, it would have been the foreign minister. But that's kind of in terms of the formality. But mm-hmm. I often say that the work that negotiating for the release of Otto Warmbier did not start when he was arrested. No. It was actually, to me, it started 6 years before when we started engaging and building the trust of the North Koreans, because those events, Otto Warmbier was not the only American detainee. As you know, there have been tens of them over the last couple of decades.
But what was the breakthrough, would you say? What was it that finally convinced them?
Well, from our perspective, and we negotiate only on behalf of the family, so this was at the request, that's our mandate, that's our authority, we were working a package of a mutual humanitarian interest, so getting something that the North Koreans wanted, and of course we wanted Otto Warmbier, we wanted some remains of American soldiers, so that was kind of the deal in the making. We almost had it before the elections. The North Koreans almost wanted to do it as a gesture to the new president, expecting that Hillary Clinton will win the election. When that didn't happen, that kind of reshuffled everything, and we tried to do the same deal with the incoming President Trump. The North Koreans actually were kind of positive about this. We couldn't get a hold of President Trump to actually authorize it. So that kind of fell through. Eventually what took place is that the U.S. intelligence got information about Otto's medical condition, and the special envoy at the time, Joseph Yun, Ambassador Joseph Yun from the State Department, went directly to the North Koreans and said, "We know, and unless you give him back to us, I will out you." Hmm. And then they say they arranged for it within days.
Wow. Unless you know, who will out whom?
Sorry?
Who will out whom?
Joseph Yun said that the United States will out North Korea for the condition of Ombia. Don't forget, at the time, nobody knew of Otto's medical condition, that he was in a coma for more than a year in captivity.
Were you guys aware of that during the negotiation?
Oh, I wish we were. We were not. And to the extent of the North Korean Foreign Ministry, they claimed that when they were negotiating with us, they even didn't know that it was kept very, very in very high classified way in North Korea. Look, I know we look at the Otto von Bier, it's a tragedy, and I got to meet his parents. They're wonderful people. Otto von Bier's condition and results was the exception to the typical American prisoners and detainees in North Korea. Typically, they come back pretty healthy. Mm-hmm. This was not the typical result of these cases.
Okay, and before we let you go, I get the sense that you don't believe that there will be any kind of an agreement here for complete denuclearization, because Kim does not want to give up at least the threat of a bomb so that he doesn't get Gaddafi'd, right? I mean, I think that's the shorthand for that. All right, so
that's exactly right.
All right, so if that is in fact the case, can the United States live with a nuclear North Korea? Can it be pacified to the point where we get to a stable relationship with them, even though they will still have nuclear weapons and are potentially a threat to us or their neighbors?
I believe so, because I believe that within the agreement, what they're willing to give is give up the capacity and the further development of their capacity to actually hit U.S. targets. So both on the ballistic and the fact that, look, the nuclear weapons that they've had, they blew them up in a lab. They haven't blown them up on top of an intercontinental missile. That's a completely different thing. So as long as we hold them back from testing and further development, the threat of on the U.S. is limited, and we can sleep quietly and peacefully. It's hard for the president, considering the expectations he created with the American people, to do this. But you can imagine, and I can imagine, that President Trump next to Kim Jong-un next week and saying, "Look, what the North Koreans are doing is terrible. They've nuclearized. And if I was president 20 years ago, I would not have let it happen. But the failure of former administrations, the U.S. administration, led to this. So I'm doing what I can in order to make sure that America stays safe. And in the long term, this will lead to their denuclearization."
All right. Mickey Bergman, an honor to have you, sir. Vice President, Executive Director of Governor Richardson Center for Global Engagement, and and was there getting Otto von Bier back, and as familiar as any Westerner can be with the inner workings of North Korea.
Absolutely.
Thank you for your insight into what's going to happen next week. We really appreciate it. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN. All right, Richard Roper is here, and Richard Roper is doing some reviewing.
And some movies that I kind of want to see just by their cast, but I need to know.
I want to get in the mood for Ocean's 8 and play like a little hipster jazzy clip from the film itself. How about that?
I want this to be so good.
Hold on, Richard Roper being brought to you by Arkadek.
Yes.
Got a little clip? Ocean's 8 clip?
Good afternoon, Miss Ocean. As you know, parole is a privilege.
It's a mistake, but it happened. And if I were to be released, I would just want the simple life. I just want to hold down a job, make some friends, you know, pay my bills.
Even if this was possible, you'd need 20 people.
7 people.
Why do you need to do this?
Because it's what I'm good at.
Okay. This is Sandra Bullock playing George Clooney's little sister.
Debbie Ocean. He was Danny Ocean. I'm going to drill down for a second on that scene you just heard. That's Sandra Bullock as Debbie Ocean in front of the parole board. The very opening scene of the movie. Talk about what she'll do if she gets paroled, right? If you go back and look at the original, not the original original from the 60s, but the 2001 Ocean's 11 with George Clooney.
That's how 11.
That, yeah, yes, that's nicely done, Sammy. Yeah. But the original of the reboot, the Steven Soderbergh film.
Yes.
They start with the same scene. That movie started with George Clooney's character, Danny Ocean, facing the parole board. Mm-hmm. But if you go back and look at that scene, you could do this as a YouTube side-by-side. In that scene, when they ask him what he'll do if he gets out, all George Clooney does is change the focus in his eyes. We know that he's going to get into trouble. Sandra Bullock's character gives this long speech, and that is the difference in quality between these two films. Whereas the first Oceans in the 2000s was so slick and smart and sly and, you know, knew the audience was smart and could keep up with things. This one, unfortunately, spells everything out. That scene is indicative of the entire movie. And it's such a disappointment because you have this terrific cast. Everybody's seen the posters and the trailers and all
yeah,
this.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Sandra Bullock and Kate Blanchett.
Rihanna. Anne Hathaway.
Awkwafina, one of my favorite actresses, I think, if you go through all of them.
I love her water.
You know, this terrific cast. And I like the fact that it's not a reboot like Ghostbusters was from a few years ago, where they basically told the same story with the female cast. Mm-hmm. It is a spin-off. And they keep teasing. You know, the opening scene, again, not a big spoiler alert. One of the opening scenes, Deborah Ocean, she's estranged from her big brother, Danny Ocean.
That's
right?
That's because they couldn't get Clooney to be in the movie.
Yeah, and though she goes, so she visits his grave. And, you know, she's got a martini, and she's got at one point, and she's saying, well, if you are really dead. And there's about two or three other occasions where they say, if he is really dead. So you keep waiting for him to show up. Is he going to show up?
Wait a second. Did I miss this? Did I miss the last Ocean's movie?
He didn't get killed in it. But you know,
did they kill him off in a movie?
If it's in the real timeline, the last one was 10 years ago, okay? So, you know, things could have happened. They never really get into the details. And, you know, listen, I'm not going to tease people and tell them the joke George Clooney's in this movie. He's not in this movie, okay? there are some references and callbacks to the other movies, but he is not in this film. And I think it's a bit of a tease for the film to keep doing that when you don't have him. You know, if you're really dead, you know, okay, well then.
Well, is that also to keep, first of all, who owns the Ocean's franchise?
Oh, it's split, I think, because, you know, you've got the original writers and producers of the film from the early 60s.
The Sinatra film.
It'll say to this day, based on characters created by, based on the, you know, that film.
Right.
And then you've got Soderbergh's a producer on this one. The director's Gary Ross, which is an interesting thing, too. He's a great director and film writer. He wrote Forrest Gump. He directed Seabiscuit. He's terrific. I mean, but I'm all for people, you know, writing, getting the best person for the job. But it is interesting that a man in his 60s would be doing this all female take on Ocean's 8. And there are some critics who have said, and I would agree with them, it seems almost a little bit like a man's idea of what an all female caper would be like. Because they, you know, the robbery takes place at the Met. So there's a lot of Met, you know, Met gala porn, all about the dresses and the, you know, it's the most lavish social evening. Mm-hmm. And they're going after a necklace and they're all oohing and aahing over the necklace. And Sandra Bullock's character, her primary motive is revenge on a boyfriend who dumped her. And another character at one point, she says she wants to join the gang because she doesn't have any female friends. All of that sounds like a 1958 movie about female bank robbers or heist masterminds, if you will.
So at the end of the day here.
Yes.
With Ocean's 8, which I really want to love because I love Steven Soderbergh. We had the great honor of having Steven Soderbergh in the studio and talking to him. He is a... he's a filmmaking genius. He's at the very best of this century's filmmakers. Mm-hmm. I want him to win all the time.
Right.
Did he win here as
a
producer?
No, it's a 2.5 star movie. It's not bad at all because you do have in the cast. Listen, when you've got, you know, Academy Award winners, you've got Anne Hathaway, Sandra Bullock, Kate Blanchett, all Academy Award winners. Rihanna's, you know, great as a, you know, a dope smoking hacker, you know, kind of called Nine Ball. Because what's your real name? She says 8 Ball, which is kind of, you know, there's some moments, and it's got that quick cut feel of the other Ocean's movies, but the heist itself isn't that clever. You know, you remember in the first Ocean's when they ticked down the Bellagio, when they showed us what we didn't see the first time, all the little tricks that were being pulled on us, and then you go, oh, they tied that all together. They don't have that moment here. And the other thing they don't have is a good villain. Andy Garcia was a good villain in the first one, right? And the Julia Roberts, you know, dynamic with George Clooney. And we don't have that. There is an ex-boyfriend. He's a dope. He's not even, you know, they dismiss him with, you know, it doesn't even take anything. So there's not that, you know, real sense of danger as well. clearly they had a lot of fun making it. They all look great, and they're good together. Some of the actors, including I think Mindy Kaling in particular, criminally underused. I wanted to see more of some of those characters. I think it'll do okay, but don't rush out to see it if you're thinking this is going to be like the, you know, female empowerment heist movie of all time. It's not.
Oh, that's too bad.
2.5 stars. Oh, that's not a recommendation.
I did want
for those
it to be that movie.
All right.
But there probably will be an Ocean's 9.
With the female cast? They'll come back?
With some of them, and some of them won't.
All right, so what?
Will Awkwafina be back?
I think you can start.
I really
with
prefer
that.
Dasani in that role.
Yeah.
Can I ask you this?
Smart water.
Will there be another George Clooney Ocean's movie?
I don't think so. And
you think he's done with Danny Ocean?
I think all the guys are. And
so Soderbergh, you think Soderbergh is actually burying him?
I think he's listed as an executive. I mean, he's brought a financial interest in this and an ownership. I don't know how hands-on he was. I mean, Steven Soderbergh. And I think, you know, if you go back by the third Oceans, it was not a good film either. It got way too wink at the camera.
You mean when
smug.
They were in... Amsterdam?
Yeah,
that
and Julia
one?
Roberts' character that is impersonating Julia Roberts.
Yes. Yeah.
You know who you look like. Whenever a movie starts doing that, you know who you look like. Yeah. Plus it's and being was, John Malkovich, you know.
And she was pregnant. Wasn't she pregnant at the time? And they had to fake that they had to make her pregnant. Like she was faking a pregnancy because that way it paid off on her being pregnant. Yeah, it did get you could tell that they were time crunched to do it. Mm-hmm. The first Ocean's 11 and Ocean's 12.
Yeah.
Were quite great.
I think so too. I agree. I think the third one, they called it Ocean's 13. They could have called it Ocean's Contractual Obligation for a lot of them. We're going to have to do three films,
felt
guys.
That way.
Go back if you get a chance and watch the. I've gone back and watched the original, and it's great just to see the Rat Pack and everything. And that's got a really cool twist ending.
Yeah, but it's not. But it's not
a great film.
The movie does it. It strings out. It's great to watch. Great to sit and late at night, have a few drinks, and watch that movie. But it is it's a guilty pleasure more than it is a great movie.
Yeah, it's not a great script.
And 11 and 12, and when you see Bernie Mac's work, now 13 gets a little wacky,
right,
because of that. But you get to see Bernie Mac, and I just miss Bernie Mac.
Yeah, he's wonderful in that. Well, go back and watch the Ocean's 11. I did about a month ago, and that movie just still cracks and pops and just sizzles.
The
first Clooney Pitt one. And count how many times Brad Pitt's character eats in the movie.
Right, there's a whole bit to that. Yeah. All right, Richard Roper, there's
come.
A movie
Lots
coming up. Just wait, hold on a second here, because this is big.
Okay.
There's a movie that is coming out that some people who have seen say is the scariest movie of the century so far. It's called Hereditary, and we will talk about that next. All right, Richard Roper is here. We're doing some reviewing. Some people say that this is the scariest movie of the 21st century. It's called Hereditary, and it's Toni Collette is in this film. Mm-hmm. You may remember her from The Sixth Sense, right? She was the mom in The Sixth Sense.
Oh, yes.
That was a very scary, creepy movie, wasn't it?
She was playing a mom of a son and realized some things that she thought the son was making up turned out to be true.
Bruce Willis was dead the whole time.
Oh, my gosh.
Spoiler alert. Oh, my God.
19 years, and he thinks it's okay.
Really?
I figured it out in the first scene, but
you
that's
did
just
not.
Me.
I did. You did.
I definitely
not.
Didn't. I definitely
Nobody
did.
Figured that one out. Who wasn't told? It was like The Crying Game. Unless someone told you,
I just knew there was a
know.
Big twist, and all I knew was it was a big twist. And then I'm watching the first scene. I'm like, he's dead.
Wahlberg's Whitey Tighties gave it away.
He's dead. He's dead. He's already dead. All right. Anyway, but that's not the point. Hereditary is the point.
So now, almost 20 years later, Toni Collette again. And by the way, she got a Best Supporting Actress nomination for that film, and she's going to get a Best Actress nomination for Hereditary. She's once again playing a mother whose own mother, shall we say, was very cold and distant and had some very interesting kind of hobbies.
Uh-oh.
Kind of in the Rosemary's Baby level
no.
kind of hobbies. And I'm not saying this is a possession film, because it's not. But now she's just buried her mother. But there's some indications that maybe mom's still sticking around. And now Toni Collette's character has a son who's a teenager and a daughter named Charlie who's a very, 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 very odd child. The kind of child who sees a dead bird then rips the head off the bird and carries the head around in her pocket just as a keepsake of the moment. You know, that kind of child.
Mm-hmm.
And then something really, 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 really bad happens to the family. And now Toni Collette's character is starting to think, like, maybe I should try to communicate with the outside world. In the meantime, though, She is having dinner with her husband, played by the great Gabriel Byrne, who was in The Usual Suspects. And by the way, Kaiser Soze was not Gabriel Byrne, so speaking of twist endings. And now they are...
Why'd you do that one, Kev? Yeah. Kevin Powell was Kaiser Soze.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
So this is a little... I've got a little clip here I want to play real quick, because this is a dinner scene. Let's just say that the son has caused a lot of heartache and tragedy for the family. And there might have been a moment where mom even maybe soaked the son in gasoline and tried to lit him up. There's all kinds of weirdness going on, but so just imagine the dinner tableau that happens.
You okay, Mom?
What?
Is there something on your mind?
Is there something on your mind?
It just seems like there might be something you want to say.
Peter.
Like what? I mean, why would I want to... say something so I could watch you sneer at me.
Sneer at you? I don't ever sneer at you.
Oh, sweetie, you don't have to. You get your point across.
Okay, so fine. Then say what you want to say, then.
Peter.
I don't want to say anything. I've tried saying
things. Okay, so try again. Release yourself.
Oh, release you, you mean?
Yeah, fine. Release me. Just say it. Just say it.
Don't you swear at me, you little s***. Don't you ever raise your voice at me. I am your mother. Do you understand?
It sounded like my birthday dinner two nights ago. God. What is going on there?
Well, there's a lot going on there, as I attempted to set up for you. So to suffice to say, there's a lot of tension in the family, but also a lot of family bonds, and things get creepier and creepier and weirder and weirder. And usually in a movie when Ann Dowd shows up, that tells you there might be trouble, too. She was the actress in The Leftovers, you know, was kind of the leader of that group with the white sheets and all that, you know. And she shows up and is going to help Toni Collette communicate with people from the other dimension. And this thing really goes for it. I will tell you that. There's one scene in particular that will probably have some people walking out, because usually when like something like that happens to a character, they'll take the camera and pull away, or they're like, oh, that's not really going to happen. It really happens. And then it really just flies off the rails. It's really brilliantly done. And
is
like
it super scary? Yeah,
it's super scary, but it's not a got you. It's not anybody in a mask with a knife chasing you around.
Chilling, haunting.
Yeah, it's very deliberate in the first hour. Almost nothing of huge consequence happens, but everything just seems very forbidding. Everything.
So
every time
you're
constantly
on the edge of your seats?
Constantly. The house itself. Beautiful house in the woods, but you just think like, what's going on over there? Yeah. And on top of everything else, her character, Toni Collette's character, is an artist who's a miniaturist, and you should see the creepy little miniature tableau she puts in the little dollhouse.
Okay,
there. Four stars. Four stars.
Wow.
It lives up to the hype. I believe it will be this year's Get Out in terms of getting Oscar consideration, even though it's in that horror genre.
When did that change? I mean, has that ever...
Last year.
Last year. Get out.
All right, very quickly, Hotel Artemis, Jodie Foster.
2.5 stars, disappointing. We love Jodie Foster, but that's disappointing. And then Nicolas Cage is in 2.11, and probably the most interesting thing about this movie, he plays a cop, and it's not any good, but they called it 2.11, so it'll show up very, very, at the very top of every queue of all time, because it's numbers, 2.11. That's why they call it that.
Oh, I see what you mean.
It's like scanner code for a robbery, but they call it 2.11 with the numbers.
That's like the Acme Anvil
cheating.
Company.
Yes.
That's the only way they were able to
that
sell
was the move.
Anvils. Yeah.
That was the
All
move.
All right, here we go. We got Judy's News in 2 minutes, and then Dan Abrams joins us. Stepping into the studio, Dan Abrams is with us. And, you know, and you love Dan Abrams for many, many, many years. Started at Court TV, worked his way to ABC News. I saw you in a heated battle with Governor Chris Christie over the weekend as you were talking.
Governor Christie and I have been doing the rounds together now that he's an ABC News contributor.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of fun to see the two of you doing this.
Yeah, it's and the truth is that actually, most of the time, we're agreeing on the Trump-related questions.
On the law, it appears.
Right, that's right.
Right.
That's right. And you know, and that's part of the thing that's been so frustrating about covering the Trump legal issues has been that there's legal analysis. And anytime you do legal analysis, in the past, it was just, oh, you know, Dan Abrams thinks this and this and this. Mm-hmm. Now it's, Dan Abrams is biased. Dan Abrams, no matter what, I mean, if I say that I don't think sitting president can't be indicted, and then I get, you know, nailed from the left, there are arguments to be made. Why would you be saying a sitting president? And then, you know, I get bashed by the right for talking about a lot of the absurd arguments that Trump's lawyers are making.
So, I would make the argument. Now, you've got a book out that takes place right before the Civil War. This is fascinating because this is like a brand extension of you in terms of a legal analyst. It's Lincoln's last trial. It's this murder case that he did right before he became president of the United States, ran for president of the United States down in Springfield. And it's fascinating because it's got all this great texture and nuggets of history and of little things about him that I think are so fascinating and about the times. But and we'll get to that in just a few minutes, but I am convinced that this is the most consequential moment in American history, save two or three others since the Civil War. I think this, around the time of World War II, when we're deciding to be in or be out, I think the 1950s during the McCarthy era, and now, in terms of this, will set a path for the trajectory of America. Would you agree with that?
You know, I think that what we're seeing is a radical departure in many ways from the role of the president. There are a percentage of Americans, not a majority, who would say that that's a good thing. And in that sense, this is a transformative moment. But I think that, you know, I don't think that it is as monumental as some people say and some people fear. I mean, for example, if you were going to say to me, what is the single most important thing that you think that going into this, I would have said, North Korea is something that really scares me a lot. You know, the question would be, you know, how is this president going to deal with North Korea? Whatever one thinks of how things are going with North Korea, it doesn't seem, at least for now, like it's going to be cataclysmic. Whether there's going to be a deal or no deal, or whether Trump is going to give away too much or not give away too much, etc. But I guess I'm not as, I don't think that this is going to be, I think this is a completely different time. I think that we are seeing things we've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, I think the system works.
Well, let's talk about cataclysm for a minute. Isn't cataclysm, because one of your other ventures, which is, I think, your greatest contribution to humanity is Mediaite, because it takes the media out, and you were able to analyze not just the stories, but the way the media tracks them, and then the way that the politics reflect off of the media, or try to use the media to advance their agenda. And I think to this exact point, is that cataclysm is really being driven by who's in power or who wants to tell the scariest story. Where are we on ISIS or terrorism in America? We've forgotten totally about that. The biggest threat we have now is our southern border, and it was North Korea. North Korea was a huge threat 3 months ago. Now they're our best friends. We're meeting with them. It's all going to be fine. And the heat gets turned up either by the White House or maybe congressional forces or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah, I mean, look, but I think that, you know, we are at a time. Look, I as someone who's both a member of the media and a lawyer, I find the attacks on the Department of Justice concerning. I don't think that it's going to impact sort of the future of the nation. I think it's really troubling, and I think that the independence of the Department of Justice is really important. I think that the attacks on the media. Look, I've been a media critic a lot of the time.
Right.
But to simply say, oh, news I don't like is fake news, is also problematic. The media deserves some criticism. The media has long been, in my view, left of center. But the notion that the media, the mainstream media, doesn't in the overwhelming number of cases get it right, it is very rare. And people, how could you say that? You know how I can say that? Is because every time the mainstream media gets it wrong, we know that. And there's either a correction or there's not, and then there's a fight about it.
Right.
But what about firing. Every other story? All of these other stories that are coming out and becoming, realizing are true. We're not going to talk about it. Look, let's come back to the book for a minute.
Yep.
Because, you know, in Lincoln's time, there was also a very divided media back then. And as Lincoln was preparing to run for president, there were particular publications he knew would be his supporters and the ones who would be his critics.
Right.
There was the Republican papers, there were the Democratic papers, etc. And, And that was just part of how the system worked.
Dan Abrams is the author. Lincoln's Last Trial is the book. I want to bring you back to the news of the week. Let's talk a little bit about the state of the investigation here. Obviously, now you have the president saying he can pardon himself. Do you believe, as a lawyer, as a legal analyst, that the president can pardon himself legally,
yeah,
look, if not politically?
Look, here's the thing. So I think that it's almost a circular question, right? In the sense that I think that the pardon, the power of pardon, is viewed as an absolute power, but it's also an absolute power that's checked. I mean, the reason the checking system is the Congress. It's not really typically going to be the courts. There's already been an effort to challenge President Trump's pardon of Sheriff Arpaio, because basically saying, because that was an effort to pardon someone for violating a court order. And when the argument goes, the president shouldn't be able to nullify one of the branches of government.
Right.
Basically saying, you can ignore any court order because I'm going to pardon. And as a result, if the only crime was contempt of court, that shouldn't be considered a valid pardon. You know, look, it's probably not a winning argument. But the first thing I would say is, I think that it is very unlikely that Mueller's team will seek to indict the president, because I think it's pretty clear that you can't indict a sitting president. There are arguments on the other side of that, but I think that most people believe that you can't indict a sitting president. And therefore, there would be no pardoning of himself.
Right.
But let's assume that that would happen, and he would try to pardon himself. I think that the check would have to be Congress. And not the courts.
Dan Abrams, Lincoln's Last Trial, The Murder Case That Propelled Him to the Presidency, is the book. Is out now. You and your co-author, David Fisher, he needs to get some credit here because undoubtedly did a lot of research.
I gave him a lot of credit. It is sort of ridiculous that his name is smaller than mine on the title, but he's
how it goes.
He was terrific and a critical part of this book.
People should get this because it's a great, I think the timing of this is excellent. Because you get to look, it takes you back in time. I find myself watching a lot of movies right now that took place where we ended up winning the war, whether it was the Cold War, World War II, something else like that, where it was a really tough time. It was a moment where Americans were not sure how this was all going to go down. And we found our way through it, and it gives me a lot of hope. And I think this book does sort of the same thing, because it sets you up into kind of the granularity of the way we really live our lives.
And look, we're talking big picture esoteric here. The bottom line is this book is also just a legal thriller. I mean, it's just a really compelling...
Because we don't really know how it's going to turn out, because nobody knows this case.
It's a great murder case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's excellent. Excellent. Dan, thanks so much for being with us.
Sure, my pleasure.
Check out Steve Cochran tomorrow. He's going to be quizzing you on the monkeys facts, and you'll get a chance to win monkeys tickets at the end of it, 7:40 a.m. tomorrow.
All right. I have some monkey facts. I heard him talking about this morning.
I like the monkeys.
Yes. Well, it's...
It's not the complete monkeys.
No, there's two monks left.
Two monkeys left?
Yeah.
Well, how many monkeys jumping on the bed?
It's two. There were four.
You got the...
And there's been some loss there.
One fell down and bumped his head.
Yeah, had a good run.
More than that. All right, but I don't want to upset the little girl. No. All right, here we go. We'll find out what's coming up on the DL with JK right after.